When I was a kid, I really liked Sonic the Hedgehog. That was my big, was anyone a big like Sonic the Hedgehog fan growing up? Okay, cool people in the room, that's nice. So I was all about Sonic the Hedgehog. I watched the cartoon. I had Sega Genesis at my grandparents' house, which was like the big draw to my grandparents' house. And I had a Game Gear. Did anyone remember the Game Gear? It had like 6 batteries. It ran out of batteries in like 3 hours. So true story, I made my dad, when I got one for Christmas, go out on Christmas Day to like probably every pharmacy in the whole town of Columbus, Ohio, till he could find one with like 6 AA batteries or whatever it took to get it. So happy Christmas for me. So that was great. Watched a cartoon. I had the comics. I also had a couple stuffed animal Sonic the Hedgehogs, actually, that I'd like sleep with or carry around everywhere. I'm sure it had like 7 deadly diseases on it, probably, by the because you're a little kid and you're carrying everywhere. And so sometimes we would go different places, and I'd carry Sonic around with me. And sometimes my dad would do this thing where we would hop in the car and we'd be driving somewhere, going to church or going to school or wherever else we were going. And my dad, I promise you, only on streets where it was like safe to do so. My dad would sometimes do this thing he called letting Sonic drive. So he'd be like, "Let's let Sonic drive." Yeah. So my dad would like take my little Sonic, hedgehog stuffed animal, and like put him on the wheel, behind the wheel. And he's like driving around, because of Sonic, right? He's got to go really fast, so he'd turn on the accelerator a little bit. He'd usually kind of, like driving around because Sonic's a little hectic. He doesn't have a lot of control necessarily, so. True story is one time my dad did it, and he didn't realize there was a cop in the subdivision we were driving by, so the cop pulled him over, which I'm really sad to this day. I'm very sad that I was too young to appreciate my dad having to give an explanation to the cop of like, "I swear, I was just using my son's stuffed animal to drive and entertain him," which I'm sure was really a great explanation. And so he would do this thing, right? Now, even as a kid, 6 or 7 or 29, however old I was when my dad would do this, I would, like, at no point was I like, "Oh my gosh, I hope we don't crash, that would be terrible," right? Like, at no point am I like, "This car is not in control of a capable, Dad, Sonic is not a licensed driver, like, is that okay, And so, although as a kid, I'm sure I would have said that because I was very stickler for the rules. And firstborn right here recovering, so. At no point was I worried about the control of the car, because I understood the person in control of the car wasn't this stuffed animal, right? The person in control of the car was my father behind the stuffed animal. Sonic's hands may have been on the wheel, but more importantly, my father's hands were on the wheel, and it was driving the car, except for the time he got pulled over, where it needed to go, and that sort of thing. We spent the last 3 weeks talking about this vision we have as a church to transform Tallahassee, to make a difference in this world, and specifically to make a difference in our city. One of the values that we have as Crossbridge is we want to be the kind of church that if our church disappeared, not just meaning like the programs or the building or anything like that, but the people, like those of you who are in here right now, you're listening to this, that if our people disappeared, that our region, our city would feel it, right? They would feel the loss of the impact that is made because we're so integrated, we're so involved in this community and in this city. And we've talked about this vision we have for our church that we want to transform our city by launching 400 multi-ethnic community groups in the next 14 years. And we've talked about each kind of part of that vision together. We've talked a little bit about how we think that could transform our city. And I'll just be really honest, that's a really big vision. That's a really big deal. There aren't even 400 people in this room, just barely short, And so, there aren't even 400 people here, so how are we going to start 400 groups, right? That's a pretty transformational kind of thing, not just for our city, but, for our church. That's pretty big. That's pretty important. That seems like a lot to ask for. And that's what I want to talk about as we wrap this up, talking about this for right now, this week. Transforming Tallahassee, and here's our first point, isn't about us, okay? It's not about us spiritually or anything like that. It's not about oh, let's make Crossbridge's name great, or anything like that. Transforming Tallahassee, though, also isn't about you in the sense that it doesn't rest in and rely on you and your power. Transforming Tallahassee is about God working through us, okay? This is how following Jesus works. Following Jesus works best when I don't understand that I am bearing the responsibility for everything that happens through me, right? Following Jesus is always me responding to God's work in this world, that we don't lead God's work in this world, we partner with God's work in this world. He does the heavy lifting, we're just the supporting cast in it, right? And the way that God normally works in this world, not that he needs my permission, not that it's like, you know, oh, wow, I was sitting up in heaven and just waiting for you to let me go, Wes, you know, like, but the idea is that often the way that God works in this world, in fact, I would tell you mostly the way God works in this world, is he works through his people in the church who take a next step to follow him, and God works through that next step, whatever it is. Some of you have experienced this. You took a next step at different points in your life, and you're like, I don't know what just happened, but what I know is it was not about me. Like, I know whatever I said. This happens to me when I preach all the time, because I'll preach, and I will sometimes come into contact with a person after the message, and they're like, when you said buh-buh-buh-buh-buh, it was so amazing. And I think in my head, I never said buh-buh-buh-buh-buh. Actually, I was very specific not to say buh-buh-buh-buh-buh, but you heard that, and they're like, and it changed my life forever, you know, or whatever. And so I've learned, don't go like, well, I didn't say that, so I don't know what you heard, you know, like that usually kind of spoils the moment, so I just don't say anything, which works out really well. But this happens all the time, that it's God working through us, right? It's his presence, it's his power working through us, not because of anything special about us. We're just the vehicle through whom God decides to do his work. This is a story of every single person in the Bible. No one in the Bible, aside from Jesus, had like this magic God thing about them, right? It was just people who decided, God, for whatever reason, decided, hey, I'm going to use that person, those people right there for my purpose. And they just were crazy enough to take the next step to, like, believe he was going to do that. Okay, that's how following Jesus works in this world. Today, I want us to take a brief look at a passage of Scripture that makes this point. And today, if you're like a person who's like, man, I was hoping to go through like 9 chapters of the Bible today, you're going to be really disappointed, because we're only going to do like 4 verses, okay? Most of this message is going to be me at the end, like telling you, you should do this, and you should do that, and you should do it. It's going to be a lot of me yelling, which usually makes it a great message. So it's going to be awesome. Just kidding. No one seems very excited about that. We're going to read through these couple of things, and Jesus is going to show us this principle, this whole idea of God working through us in a whole new way. And then we're going to have some really practical, hopefully kind of down-to-earth, easy-to-take next steps for us to say, okay, so how can we start right now to shape the life of our city? Okay, that's what this is all about today. So I want to show you these words. If you're not even a follower of Jesus, you're here. Man, I'm so glad you're here today checking stuff out. Even if you've never picked up a Bible before, you may have heard some of these words before, okay? So do not be surprised. But here's what Jesus says. He says, don't set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it. Okay, Jesus says, I just don't be worried about what you eat or drink. Now, that seems like a really big ask for me. I care a lot about, my wife and I have already decided after lunch, after church today, like these 3 things are options for where we can have lunch at. You know, like we are directly disobeying Jesus' words like a hypocrite, which is great. But Jesus didn't just say this to our culture, okay? Jesus said this in a culture where people didn't have savings accounts, where workers' comp was not a thing, where insurance didn't exist, okay? To a culture where you were either a have or a have not, okay? There was no middle class. Like, you had or you didn't have. And literally every person Jesus was talking to was one problem away from being homeless and destitute. Because in this culture, you basically signed up, you worked a day, you got one day's wages to pay for enough stuff for one day, and you repeated it. And so if you ever got injured, if you ever got sick, if something came up and you had to, and your kids came home and were like, I'd like to play football. And you're like, well, I would like to afford for you to play football, son, but we can't. Sorry. You know, like that kind of thing. Okay. That's how this culture was. Like, no one had any extra. And Jesus walks in and he says, hey, guys, easy breezy, Jesus, you know, don't worry about it. You know, don't worry. Don't be concerned right now. And then everyone around Jesus, I'm sure, thought, why, Jesus? Why are you saying this? And so Jesus says, let me tell you why. The pagan world, okay, people who don't know your God, people who don't know me, the pagan world runs after all these things, and here's the key. Your Father knows you need them, okay? Your Heavenly Father knows what you need. When you pray to God, God never goes, I didn't know. When you pray to God, God doesn't go, oh, that's why you've been acting that way. Oh, that's why you're so stressed, right? When you pray, you never give God extra information. He already knew, okay? And here's kind of the connection I think Jesus wants us to make is, like any good parent, your Father in heaven knows what you need, okay? It does not bring God pleasure to be like, oh, you know, I'm going to withhold stuff that I know you need, right? What Jesus is saying is you can rest assured in every and any situation, your Father in heaven knows what you need, and the implication is, and will make sure you have exactly what you need for exactly the task at hand, whether that's feeding your family, clothing your children, or, as we'll see, doing his work in this world. Okay, because here's how Jesus finishes up his little teaching here. Seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Okay, whatever you need, as you seek him, as you seek his will, as you seek his work in the world, he's going to make sure you have what you need. And then he finishes up with this, and it's kind of a backhanded statement, okay? Do not be afraid, little flock. Okay, now that sounds really cute. You know, when I see that, I think of like a cute, cuddly sheep. You know, I think of like a Hallmark card, you know. I think of like, oh, that's so cute. Okay, sheep are dumb. I mean, like, sheep are like stupid, okay? I mean, no kid is ever like, oh, you want to be a cheetah? Oh, you want to be a tiger? I'm going to be a sheep, you know? Like, that's awesome, okay? Like, when we make fun of a group of people who just do whatever they're asked to do, what do we call them? We call them sheep or sheeple, you know? Like, we talk about them that way because we understand sheep are not very smart. Jesus very intentionally doesn't say, don't be afraid, little group of bears, you know? Don't be afraid, little lions, you know? He says, flock, sheep, because everyone around Jesus understood sheep are pretty helpless. They need a lot of help, okay? Sheep, this is a true story. In the ancient world, sheep would just march right off a cliff and many of them would die because essentially what happened is like one sheep would take a wrong turn and another sheep would be like, oh, I wonder what's over there. You know, you just kind of walk off, you know. That's why you had to have a shepherd, okay? Like sheep, if you're more than like 6 inches away from where they can bite you, they can't do anything, right? Like it's not, that's why they always had to have shepherds and herds because that was the only protection you could get, okay? So Jesus says you're a sheep. He says, you ain't good for nothing. You know, like, you're good to be sheared for wool, and that's it. But I don't think Jesus wanted us to take the metaphor quite that far. Anyway, so that's another sermon for another time, probably. Don't be afraid, little flock. Why, Jesus? Well, let me tell you why. Because your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Your Heavenly Father is pleased. He is delighted. He's excited. He's happy to. It brings him joy to give you his kingdom, right? And that applies oftentimes when we read these words and read these verses, we think about it in terms of our resources, right? We think about it in terms of, oh, I need money, or oh, I need, you know, more time, or whatever it is, right? We think about it in terms of the physical, concrete things that we lack, and that is probably an apt way to think about it. But Jesus, I think, also means it in terms of the kingdom resources that are needed to accomplish his work in the world. Because we won't read them, but after these verses, Jesus actually says, so, basically, hey, go out and help people. Like, that's what Jesus says after that, right? The implication being, because God is pleased to give you the kingdom, okay? We should just stop and think about this fact. It pleases God to give you his kingdom. When you face a situation, when you face an opportunity to step into something that God is desiring to do in this world, it pleases, it brings him pleasure to equip you with the resources necessary to usher in and bring about that kingdom. Okay? Am I making sense here? Okay? So when I step into a situation, God is excited to step into it with me. Okay, earlier this week, I think it was like Tuesday, I was walking our doors, like, you know, 8:45 or something like that. I'm getting ready to drive to the McDonald's just up the street that I work from the lobby of, you know, a couple days a week. And so I'm walking out, I'm going out to my car, I've got a couple things with me, and I happen to bump into our upstairs neighbor who's walking down the stairs right in front of our apartment at that moment. And so I was chatting with her. I'd actually ran into her previously at a coffee shop in town the day before, and so I was kind of chatting with her about what she was working on there and doing there. She's a law student in her first year, so like her life is basically miserable, because that's what law students do, from what I understand, is they're just professional misery people. So, she's like, yeah, you know, I was working on my thing. I finally got this paper turned in, and she told me what was on. I was like, I never even heard of that before. So whatever a tort is, you know, I'm a baker. That means a different thing to me. And so, she, you know, we're talking, you know, it's like 30 seconds. We're walking from our door to the, you know, our cars and stuff. And she just seemed kind of down, you know, like it wasn't like, you know, like people often do, right? It wasn't like she walked down like, my life is a cesspool of misery right now, right? She didn't say anything like, you could just kind of tell, you know, you could kind of see something was off. And so as we're getting into our cars, I had this kind of prompt in my head. I was like, hey, you should pray for Kaylee and you should let her know that you're praying for her, you know? Now, like, I don't know about how you, some people are really good at this. I'm not really good at this. I'm never able to pray for someone without seeming weird, you know? Like, I feel like every time I do it, it's like, I would have preferred you not pray for me or do it from a distance, you know? Like, that'd be a lot more applicable. And then, like, I feel like because I'm a pastor, like, people expect it to be really amazing and cool, and I feel like I'm very disappointing when I pray for people. People want, like a, you know, or something. Like, I don't have that, you know? And so, like, I don't do that. And then, like, I don't want it to be weird either, because I know my friend, like, she hasn't had all these great experiences with church. So, like, the last thing I want to do is, like, we are praying for healing. You know, I don't want to, like, turn two-syllable words into, like, five-syllable words. You know, healing in Jesus, you know, his name or whatever. And so, like, I decide I pray for her in the 10-minute car ride to where I'm going. And then when I pull up into my parking spot, I pull my phone out and I, like, you know, compose my text. And I spend like the 90 seconds freaking out about like, oh, you know, analyzing every single word and how it could be taken, you know. And I send it, you know. And I walk in, I do my thing, whatever. And Kaylee responds a couple minutes later. As I'm sitting down, she said, the first words on her text were, thank you. That is just what I needed, okay? Now, I'm a great prayer, I know. So here's what that was for me, right? That was a reminder of Jesus saying, hey, little flock, little Wes, you know, I am pleased to give you the kingdom. Wes, all I'm asking you to do is the right thing I'm asking you to do, and I'll take care of the rest. Now, I really love it when it works out like my little story, right? I love it when people work out that, oh, thank you so much. That was so great. That was so awesome, right? You know, here's what I also know is sometimes God works through the door that gets slammed in your face too, doesn't he, right? Sometimes I do something where I feel convinced I did the right thing, and it's like, ooh, wow, that seemed awful. Seemed awful lot like the wrong thing, actually, right there. You know, and sometimes we get it wrong. Sometimes the result looks a little bit different than I want to. And part of what taking Jesus at his word means is that I believe when Jesus says, hey, I delight, your Father in heaven desires and delights to give you the kingdom, what that means is that's true when it works out great. That's true when it works out poorly, and that's true when it works out everything in between. And what is true about the way that Jesus looks at this world is you and I don't really have control over any of that. All I have control of is me, okay? And God is going to do what he desires to do in this world. My role and your role is simply to step into that and say, God, if you're going to work in this world, I don't want to be the inhibitor to it, okay? One of the prayers I pray for our church every day is, God, you have a very funny decision-making process because you've entrusted me with this little corner of the kingdom to lead, okay? And God, I know the greatest inhibitor to Crossbridge doing something great in this world is probably me, so help me not be that, you know? Help me get out of my own way, get out of your way, get out of the church's way so that you can do your work through us, right? Because I understand, and I hope you understand, our job is just to step into what Jesus asks us to do, and we'll let him take care of the rest, okay? So, to finish up, I have 9 next steps for you. Yeah, I groaned already. That's good. That's what I was going for, okay? This is the worst sermon ever because you should never give people 9 next steps to take. I'm breaking all, I almost made it 10. You know, I wanted a full 10, and then the 10th one just didn't work out the way I wanted it to. So, you're stuck with 9, okay? Here's my thing. You do not have to do all 9 of these, okay? You can go to heaven and do 0 of these, in fact. I checked beforehand, okay? But if you want to make a difference in this world, here's what I'm encouraging you to do. I'd love for you to do a couple of these, okay? These next steps are all ones I came up with, which should tell you they're flawed, okay? They're not perfect. You can go to lunch and you can make fun of my next steps if you want to. You can be like, wow, those were so bad. I can't believe we pay him for that. You know, like you can do that. All I care is I want you to take next steps to transform Tallahassee. I want you to take next steps to make a difference in our world. And I hope maybe some of these are great for you to use. Maybe some of these are just things that kind of get your gears and your brain turning and moving and thinking and get the juices flowing on something that you can do, okay? My goal here is to inspire you to take action. My goal is for us to leave here and to actually join God in his work of shaping and changing our city. What is negotiable is how you do that. What is not negotiable is that you would do that. Are we clear? Yes, okay. Now, to make it easier, some of these you can do on your own. You're fine to do these on your own. They count whether you let us know you're doing them or not, okay? Some of these you may need to take a next step with our church or ask for information or ask for help or get paired up with someone, and that's totally fine. So to do that, here are two ways you can do that. Number one way you can do that is you can text this phone number, okay? 850-583-0712. 850-583-0712. I tried to make it cool, like 8675, but it didn't work out that way, okay? It's on the bottom of your program. You can do that, okay? You can text that at any point, okay? So if you're listening to this in the future and you're like, man, I should really do that, you can still text it. It's still going to work. Just so you know, it's a Google Voice number, so it's not my phone number. So if you're like, what? You know, it's not going to get to me necessarily. It eventually will, but it's not my phone number. It's our church's phone number. You can text it. I promise you're not signing up for like, you know, check out these free prescription drugs I found or anything like that, okay? Text that phone number. Now, some of you I know, it's like texting, whoa, that's a little much. So you can do what I call OG texting, original gangsta texting, which is just actual text on a connection card, okay? So you can do that. If that's your style, you can do that as well. We got them at each end, okay? If you need to take a next step, you can do them those ways. It's on the bottom of your program as well, so you can do it there. Here we go. 9 next steps. You ready for this? No. All right, let's go. Too late. Failed. All right, step one. You can transform Tallahassee by radical prayer. Oh, what a surprise. You know, like, I know, it's so disappointing, right? But it's true. You can. We had a leadership team meeting for our church earlier this month. And it was a leadership team meeting where we were finalizing our budget, which around here, like a lot of churches, we're never like, man, we have so much money. What are we going to do with it right now? Like, it's kind of like, well, Wes, you walked in here with 2 arms and 2 legs, and you get to leave with 2 of those 4 limbs. And you can even decide which 2, but you're going to lose 2 of them. You know, like, that's kind of what it feels like financially as we're trying to figure out the budget here. And so I'm getting despondent. I'm getting worried, you know, all these kind of things. We're finalizing this. And Kane Miller, one of our leadership team members, makes a statement. He says, basically, guys, if our finances are going to get right, things are going to work out the way we want to, we're going to have the money and the resources we feel like we need, it's going to happen because we humble ourselves and we get on our face and we just say, God, we need you to do it. God, we need you to work. God, we need you to move. And we're just... we're just going to sit here in this spot on our face, humbling ourselves until you do it. And that was a really good reminder for me from Kane of like, hey, Wes, your 67-week sermon series on here's financial giving, you know, or whatever it is, probably isn't going to be the thing that pushes us over the top, you know, or anything like that. It's going to be God and his work in our church. Some of you, the way you could transform Tallahassee is every day you commit to spend some time in prayer, to get on your face, to fast, to do whatever you got to do and say, God, I'm seeking you. I'm seeking you on behalf of our church. I'm seeking you on behalf of our broken and fallen pastor, who is a mistake-prone person, as you are well aware, Jesus. You know, and he'll go, yeah, I know. I was just talking to him about it this morning, okay? And so you do that. You pray. You do all that, because I do believe that makes a difference. That is important. And I believe if we would do that together and say, God, use us to help disconnected people connect to you, that could be a powerful, powerful, powerful thing. Second thing you can do. Now, you can transform Tallahassee by choosing to be bad at something. I read a book earlier this year. It was called Finish by John Acuff, and it's a book where he details these people who finished a really, really big goal. You know, they lost 100 pounds, or they started a business, or they wrote a book, or they did, like, that goal that all of us have that you want to do and you just never get around to doing. And he said one of the practices he found out was common across each person, no matter what the goal was they all chose to be bad at something. And so he talked about his own story, and he talked about how he'd always wanted to write a book, but the problem was was trying to write a book and be good at TV. Until he decided, you know what, I'm going to be bad at TV so I can be good at writing a book. And so he said, you asked me about Game of Thrones, you asked me about House Hunters, you basically anything after Matlock, and I can't help you out with it, okay? But he said, I chose to be bad at one thing so I could choose to be good at the right thing, okay? No one in my life have I ever met that said, you know what, my problem is I just have too much time. I have so much time to do everything. It's like today, I did all the stuff I had to do, and I was like, gosh, what am I going to do with this extra 6 hours I've got right now? That's no one, okay? Here's the fact. If you want to transform Tallahassee, it's going to happen because you choose to be bad at something. Some of you need to choose to be bad at TV. Some of you need to choose to be bad at Minecraft, okay? Some of you need to choose to be bad at your lawn. Some of you need to choose to be bad at the Florida State Seminoles 2021 drafting class or whatever for football, okay? You know, like, if you watch any Florida State football, they're probably going to be bad at it too. I'm sure that, you know, the FSU AD is coming at me right now. But you need to choose to be bad at something, okay? Because here's what happens. We try to cram everything in, and it doesn't work. Something gets left behind. So you should just choose right now what's going to get left behind, okay? Third thing. Some of you can transform Tallahassee by being the best church member ever. That's right, yeah. Woo for church. You should serve if you don't serve. You should join a group if you're not in a group. You should give financially if you don't give financially. And you should give millions and millions of dollars, okay? I will gladly name one of these cafeteria tables after you, if you will give us this is the Isaac Leonard, you know, cafeteria table right there. Not that you have $1 million or anything. That'd be great if you did, but you know, you should do that. Okay, here's another thing. You should, like, when you notice a problem in our church, you shouldn't just, like, assume that telepathy is going to communicate it to the leaders here, right? I am not very good at telepathy, okay? I try really hard. It doesn't work, right? You should voice it, and here's what you should do. When you voice it, you should also voice it with a solutions-oriented attitude, right? I feel like people aren't connected here. So, Wes, could you call 45 people is not a solution, okay? I will say no, I will not. When you notice an issue, right, voice it, and then be a part of solving it. Be a part of make it, like, have that kind of, that's a great church member. I would love every single person to have that attitude, okay? Like, be the best church member you can be, and that will shape our church, and I believe it will shape our world. A fourth thing you can do. Some of you should transform Tallahassee by apprenticing with a Crossbridge leader, okay? We want to start 400 small groups, and so what that means is we need 400 small group leaders, okay? We have 3 small groups right now, so we're just 397 short of our goal, okay? I could get one of those big thermometers here on stage, you know, and we could have it on there, okay? But what that means is some of us, the calling that we have is to step into leadership of a ministry area, of a small group, okay, of doing something like that. And the first step toward doing that is saying, you know what? I'm going to apprentice under an existing leader. Okay, it's kind of the image of an apprentice under a master craftsman. What do? Well, they just kind of sit under, they watch them do the thing, they learn from them, they train, they grow. I believe that any follower of Jesus can be a leader in this world. All that is required is for you to have the humility to say, I'm willing to learn and I'm willing to follow Jesus. And if that's you, boom, we can move forward with that, right? We can do that, okay? And for some of you, hey, you're involved, you're invested, you're doing stuff here, and the next step is to say, man, maybe I should hop off the bench and kind of hop into the game in this new sort of way for me. Fifth thing you can do. You can transform Tallahassee by opening your home. We read about this in the first week of the series, but in Acts chapter 2, when we meet the first Christians, they were known for how they opened their homes to the people around them. Acts 2:42 and following tells us that they made a habit to meet in each other's homes, to break bread, to pray, to do all this kind of stuff, okay? And some of you, opening your home could be a transformational practice. What we know about the world around us is we are more connected and more lonely than we ever have been at any point in our history. Okay, there, I don't know what it is, something amazing happens when you eat food in proximity with other people. I don't know what it is, I don't know how it works, I just know it works. Some of you have a neighbor, and they moved in, and you're like, man, we should have them over. And I'm just telling you, do it, okay? Some of you have a guest room in your home, and that guest room in your home right now is collecting junk, and what should be in it is a person that you open that guest room to, that you know who could use it, who needs it, okay? Opening your home is a transformational practice because it connects people, and when we connect people, we have taken the first step into shaping and changing and allowing God to be at work in their lives in a new way, okay? Another thing you can do is not just open your home, but you can make Tallahassee your home, okay? I'm going to talk to two groups of people. First group of people I'm going to talk to, people in college, okay? Listen up. You came here to go to one of our city's three institutions of higher education, and here's probably the thought process you had if you came from any city in Florida that wasn't Tallahassee. You thought, okay, I'm going to spend four or hopefully less years in this cow town suffering through whatever's going on here, and then I'm going to move away to the bustling mecca of Jacksonville. I know, wherever it is that you want to go. No shade at Jacksonville. Well, a little shade at Jacksonville. But, okay, here's what I want to ask you to do. What if you stayed here? Like, what if you just decided, I'm going to make this place my home? What if you decided that instead of seeing Tallahassee as the next spot onto whatever my generic destination is, like, I'm actually going to decide to make this my destination? That could be, that'd be great. You could partner with our church long-term in doing this, but that'd just be good for our city, right? That would be good for, like, that would allow you to change it, because it's kind of hard for me to change Tallahassee from Atlanta or wherever you go, right? Now, the second group of people are people kind of like me, okay? And if you don't do this, I'm not offended, I'm not hurt, but I do think it's worth throwing out there. Some of you, you live in Tallahassee right now, and you're going to move at some point in the next 14 years, not elsewhere necessarily, but somewhere else in Tallahassee. What if you made the south side where you move your next home to? Now, here's what I understand, just kind of the way that economics work in our city, that's probably not going to be the greatest financial investment for you. I'm not asking you to do it because it's a great financial investment. I'm asking you to do it because it's a city transformation investment. And here's what we know about how that works is the simple act of home and property ownership in a city causes all sorts of good things to happen. It brings jobs to areas. It increases the pride of ownership in an area, and therefore the sense that people want to live and belong here. It reduces crime. It opens up economic opportunity. It entices new businesses to come to new places and help new groups of people, okay? That your purchasing power carries power, okay? And so for whatever reason, in our city, the south side of our city, like once you go south of Appalachia, for whatever reason, it just kind of feels like forgotten. And what if a group of people just decide, you know, we're going to be part of revitalization that happens here on the south side, and we want to do that, right? We're going to make this place our home. Maybe that could be you, okay? Another thing, you can transform Tallahassee by being a regular on the south side. Just up the street on South Adams Street is one of our libraries here in our city. What if instead of studying at Strozier or whatever library you go to study, or the Starbucks that you're going to spend, you know, $7 on like a drink with 89 grams of sugar in it, you know, and a pumpkin on top or whatever, you know, like what if you just went to the library up here on South Adams Street and did your studying there and interacted with people there? You know, moms or dads or whoever, right? If you like take your kids on the weekends to play at a park or somewhere, right? Like, their parks on the south side of town, too, right? What if you just became a regular at them and at the events that they host? What if you decided right now, every Sunday after church, instead of arguing about what restaurant we're going to go to, we're just going to go to the same restaurant each week, and we're going to sit in the same section with the same server and the same people, and we're going to focus on being a regular and allowing that to be a transformational habit. You're really smart people. You can find a way to be a regular on the south side of town somehow. You just got to think about it. You got to be purposeful about it. And as you do so, you can form relationships, you can invest in people, and you can be a part of transforming and shaping our city, okay? Another thing you can do, you can transform Tallahassee by being aware of its struggles, okay? Some of you, the most spiritual thing you could do is you could just go and sign up for a subscription to the Tallahassee Democrat and read it every day. Because what happens when you read the paper and you learn, like, the news headlines here every day is all of a sudden, like, these problems and issues our city faces, they have real names, and they have real stories, and they have real people. And you don't just get angry about it like some talking point in our city, right? Like you actually understand some of the issues involved, right? You become aware of, oh, wow, yeah, like it's not just another shooting that happened somewhere in our city. It's a shooting that happened because of drugs somewhere in our city and the presence of there. And why are there drugs in our city? Well, because there's a lot of hurt in our city, right? And you become aware of that, right? Or you become aware of corruption in our city government and you start to kind of realize, wow, we have some really broken structures and systems and things here in our city that a follower of Jesus could be a part of and make a difference in, right? I have a friend up in Northwest Indiana. She's getting ready to run for the school board up there because she decided, like, one day she just had her eyes open to some of the issues they're facing the town where she grew up, and she wanted to make a difference, right? Some of you might do that. You know, I don't know. Okay, some of you could be aware of struggles by signing up to volunteer with an organization. We have people in our church who do this. I'm so proud of them, right? Sign up for Habitat for Humanity or Big Brothers Big Sisters or Big Bend Homeless Coalition or ECHO or any of our community impact partners. Like, that can be a way to be aware. Tutor at the school here. Help kids learn how to read. That'll help you become aware of issues. You know, we go to these events. I've told you about them before on occasion, but my wife and I have went to these events called Local Color, and they're these things. They're designed to convene a conversation around race in our city and around discrimination in our city, and that can be a great way to become aware of problems you didn't know already, okay? There are plenty of ways to do this. When you become aware, you begin to care, okay? And so maybe for some of us, being aware is a next step. And then finally, last next step. Here we go. You're done. I know it's like drinking from a fire hose here. Last one. You can transform Tallahassee by caring about disconnected people, people who are disconnected from God. This has always been our mission. This has always been our heart. This has always been a really big part of who we are, that we are focused on those who do not know Jesus yet. That's what makes our church great. That's what I love about our church, okay? This is a calling for each and every one of us. You cannot opt out of this one. But I don't want you to just, like, care about disconnected people in some generic way. Here's where I'm upping it to, like, the next step level. We have Christmas Eve coming up in, like, a month, okay? It's on December 24th again this year. Who knew, you know? Crazy. And we're going to host a service right here in this room at the school at 6 p.m. on that day. Next weekend should all work out accordingly. We are going to have a bunch of invite cards that we're actually going to give you that you can use to invite friends and family or whoever, you know, coworkers, different people, to come and check out our church and be a part of this. And here's what we know. Like I told you last week, Christmas Eve is a time when people are open to a conversation about Jesus in a new way. They're kind of looking for God's work in their life. It's just a perfect opportunity to invite someone and kind of be a springboard for them potentially connecting to God and his work in their lives in a new way. I want to challenge you to invite 25 people to Christmas Eve, one for each day moving up into Christmas, okay? Now, you don't need a card to do it. You can start now, you know? And here's what doesn't count is you sharing, like, a Christmas post from our Facebook page and, like, tagging no one, because everyone just ignores that usually, right? So you got to, like, tag someone, be like, come to my church, Jim Smith, you know, I'm coming at you, you know, I don't know, whatever. Probably don't put that. Jim will be a little intimidated maybe if you say that, but here's what I want you to do. If you're interested in doing this, text or connection card, whatever, let us know. I will set aside 25 invite cards for you that you can just kind of carry around, and whenever you get the opportunity to invite someone to come and check out our church. And here's why I choose 25, not just because the number of days to Christmas, but here's why I know. Studies show us that 70 to 80% of people who don't go to church would come to church if a friend would just invite them. You have a 3 in 4 chance of getting a yes, okay? Now, here's what we know. So if you invite 25 people, what that means is like 18 of them will say yes to you. Let's just assume another half of them say no because I'm traveling, I'm shampooing my hair, you know, whatever like lame dating excuses you gave when that guy you didn't like asked you out. You're like, oh, too bad, I have an IRA class that I don't know, whatever it is, right? Okay, even if half of them say no, that's still 9 families. That's 9 people. That's 9 whoever you've invited who are going to take you up on the next step statistically, okay? That's a pretty big thing, right? Like that's a pretty awesome thing to get to celebrate. I got a chance to help 9 people take a next step toward God to at least hear this thing about how Jesus loves them, how he came to this world to save them, to die for them, to give his life for them. That's a really, really big deal, right? That could transform our city. That is helping disconnected people connect to God. Your Father in heaven, Jesus, says to you, to me, to all of us, for now, for all time, It delights, it pleases your Father to give you every resource needed to accomplish the work of his kingdom. When we follow him in that, what we are saying is, God, when you say that, I actually believe that. I'm willing to exercise the faith to follow you into that. My plea for you today is that you and I would join him in that work. I thought about finishing and we could all like huddle up and like do like the hands thing, you know, like, let's yell cross bridge on three. But then I was like, that's really stupid. So I'll just make a joke about it and now pray at the end and then we can be done. Okay, so let's go ahead and pray. Jesus, thanks so much that you inform us of that really important thing, that you are delighted to give us the kingdom. I pray that would seep into the heart of every Christ follower here today. I pray that we would know beyond the shadow of doubt that you are going to equip us with exactly what is needed to do the work that you've called us to do. And then out of that understanding, Father, I pray out would flow the next steps you are calling us to take. Jesus, we pray you would use our church to transform Tallahassee however you wish, however you desire. I just pray that each of us would show up and say, here I am, Jesus, put me to work. What do you want me to do? And we pray this in your powerful name.